everyone. My name is Laura Eady, and we're back with another brilliant session of The Notes Between, a podcast about everything to do with songwriting, and you guessed it, everything in between. My next guest for this session is the incredible Ashani White. Hello, Ashani.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much. Folks, we've got a 2-hour difference. Ashani got up at the lovely hour of 9:30 UK time.
Which, okay, before everyone jumps on me and says, 9:30 is not early, I'm a musician, okay? It's early for me.
Exactly. I feel your pain. I feel your pain. Oh, thank you for starting that and saying that. Folks, if you're listening, you know, musicians, we work crazy hours. So 9:30 for us is just not acceptable. However, yeah. Ashani has made a wonderful exception for this cause because we're going to talk about your music. Mm-hmm. And very quickly, before we delve into what I know is going to be an incredible session, I'm just going to talk a bit about you whilst you're there in front of me over Zoom. You have had, dear Ashani, an incredible couple of years. You've just sort of made a name for yourself in no amount of time, sticking true to your genre, which we'll explore in a bit. You were recently nominated last year for an Ivor Novello Rising Star Award, which is incredible. You've drawn comparisons to the likes of Ella Fitzgerald, meets Liana LaHavas, meets D'Angelo, meets Radiohead, meets Nirvana, and your approach in particular to jazz harmony and melodies is just very, very raw and very authentic and visceral, which has obviously captured the likes of so many artists and critics and the respect. And I think that for me, when I listen back to your music, as I told you yesterday, I was listening all day long, you do obviously have a beautiful voice. And I think what I love about your music is that you are exactly who your bio, press, and everyone has said. You are Ashani, a person who wants to tell a story, a person who wants to keep reminding people that, hey, I'm here and I want to break down doors. I want to create a space, which we'll explore much later into the podcast. So I want to start by talking about what makes your particular music so unique. And that is the fact that after looking at press, as we said, and listening to your music and your amazing, by the way, presence on TikTok. How do you do it? I don't know. TikTok. You obviously have actually definitely certainly coined the term soul grunge. So let's talk about that. What is soul grunge for you?
I think people always think about the music and what it sounds like, which I do think it is in the music for sure. But I think it's also like an attitude that I have to creating soul music and jazz. I think grunge at its core was DIY. It was punk. It was, you know, all of these things, a community that kind of rose from the environment, like in Seattle back in the 90s. And I think grunge for me is that, the moodiness, the kind of seriousness but also kind of playful of the sound, and also the community that it created. So my music has, obviously it has kind of themes of harmony that you might see in grunge, and it's quite dark and it is quite moody, but it also comes from the heart, and it also tells a story, and it also aims to speak to people just as much as grunge did in the 90s. But yeah, it's more about kind of the musical inspiration behind my songs, and how, you know, in normal soul music you might not hear riffs and, you know, like guitars and distortion, and but in mine you will, but you'll also hear my voice, which is, it stems from jazz and it stems from soul music. So it's just a mixture of that, I guess. It's just who I am. So I didn't actually give it the name grunge soul. Somebody else did, which made it really cool to me. And I was like, oh, that actually makes sense to me. That's what I'm doing, kind of. So I took it and ran with it. And I think it's such a good explanation of what I do.
I love all that. And I'm hearing so many things which I was actually thinking about myself when I listened to your music. So whoever gave you that name, well done to him/her. That's exactly what your music is. And I think that It's really important, the point you raise about, well, you know, it's about who influenced me. Now, I know that you've mentioned, well, yeah, let's talk about the Seattle scene. So I'm from the generation of the 90s. So the 90s is my generation, and I'm really, really, really happy, Ashani, that you're like, yeah, grunge is awesome. Because of course it
Yeah,
is.
so cool.
It's awesome. And it's unapologetic. I feel like grunge, every genre, you know, every decade sees a different genre. And I do think there are new genres being invented, but I do think that essentially each genre is kind of like a reformation or a rearrangement of what w was previously around. For instance, you mentioned soul. Soul, as we both know, is kind of like the sixth cousin of jazz, you know. And then you have grunge, which is like the rebel, the rebellious, you know, answer to folk. And then indie lies somewhere in between. And it's really great to talk about that as musicians. But I think for me, going back to what you grew up with, how did you grow up listening to the 90s? I mean, who introduced it, and what did you feel when you were listening to that kind of music?
Yeah. So I was born in 97, so it was way over when I was born and when I was able to listen to music. Music has always been quite a big thing in my house. My mum is a Jamaican lady. I always shout her out whenever I do interviews because my mum is incredible. Music was always on in our house, but we used to listen to a lot of MTV bass. My mum loved Jamaican music and bashment and reggae and lovers rock, and also a lot of like R&B soul, so a lot of like Mariah Carey and things like that, which I think kind of gave me the interest in singing. Like I remember singing Hero by Mariah Carey when I was about, I don't
Nice.
know, when I was like 8 years old,
Oh, wow.
and trying to belt out the notes and really trying to like get my voice to be something that I recognized. And it's funny because we also, me and my sister shared a bedroom and we had a computer in our bedroom from very young. Which is obviously such a privilege. And on that computer, my brother was really techie with internet, so we were able to have like things like LimeWire, which is a very yeah
Oh, wow,
we could download our own music. And you know, my mum worked really hard to make sure we had things to listen to music on and laptops and iPods and things like that. So me and my sister started listening to Bratz Rock Angels, which Bratz are dolls and they're very cool. They've got passion for fashion. They've got really cool clothes and they had loads of films and TV shows and games and music. And the music that me and my sister that drew our attention was the Rock Angels stuff. And it was all very, I don't know, a mixture between pop punk and glam rock and anything that you could imagine the 2000s thought was rock, you know?
I love that.
So I kind of like, I really felt seen by these songs and they were well written and they were great voices and there was guitar and there was attitude and it seemed really cool to me that these Bratz dolls were making rock music. I kind of
Wow.
went on there like kind of growing and growing, and as soon as I got my own iPod and me and my sister kind of had separate ways from listening to music, we got into pop punk. So a lot of Paramore, a lot of Panic at the Disco, a lot of
Wow.
early 2010s and late 2000s bands, and I just always felt a lot more seen by that type of music than I did R&B. I think mostly because the lyrics were a bit, they had a bit more meat on the bones, you know, they were telling stories in their own ways. So I started learning guitar at 13, went off to uni, kind of stopped playing guitar, went off to college, went stopped playing guitar a little bit and got more into the neo soul and jazz. And jazz was really hard for me to learn on guitar because I didn't know any of the chord shapes. I was completely self-taught, and jazz is kind of like a whole different beast. Like you have to be amazing at playing jazz, or I thought back then anyway. And I think it took coming around to like COVID times, I kind of started delving back into rock music and what happened pre-rock music, because I had more of a musical education. So I was like, okay, who made the biggest waves, who made changes, what, where can I find inspiration? And I stumbled across Radiohead and Nirvana and Jeff Buckley. And I think those three things, the kind of concoction of those three things, especially Jeff Buckley and his voice and the way he approaches singing and playing guitar, kind of lit the bulb in my head that was just like, oh, like this is it. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I've always been like an alternative girl, you know. I've always liked indie music and punk and all of those things. And, you know, I never really saw myself in like wearing chains and platform boots and all of those things. But when I saw a band like Radiohead or even Nirvana, who their clothes were just checkered shirts, like, you know, it, and they were still making groundbreaking and punk and attitude music. So I think those were the influences that really showed me, like,
wow,
okay, this is how you do it.
Wow, that's so much to unpack there, and it really just, it just, I need you in person, Ashani. This is not fair that we're across this. Folks, I don't know, you can't see me on Zoom, but I'm just sitting there going, yep, 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 wow, yes, and wow some more. I think I haven't heard, honestly, and I will say this because it's my podcast, I can say what I want. I haven't heard many young musicians such as yourself, I will say that have really just done the research into why they like what they like. It's uncanny to hear you speak about, you know, and just paraphrasing you here, when you say, well, I wanted to look at the music which made me feel seen, and I wanted to look at the music which spoke to me. And you mentioned a lot about lyrics. And it's interesting when you cite who your influences are, who are basically all white males. And in this day and age, we talk about those things. But when I was growing up, we didn't. And like you, parallel to your journey, although I'm like 13 years older than you, I realized that I never felt seen by pop music. You know, my background is also multicultural. I'm Canadian, Lebanese, Palestinian, born and raised in Greece, lived in London, Scotland. So for me, belonging is also very much part of who I am, you know. And like yourself, I've developed my own identity. So all this to say that I actually, like yourself, looked at the past to define who I was. So I looked at bands which were way before my time, my dad's generation. Like Woodstock bands like Joni Mitchell or Jimi Hendrix or Pink Floyd. And I see Ashani smiling here, like, yeah, yep. So these guys and women, and, you know, Joan Jett and all those amazing musicians, they sort of parlayed their way into the grunge scene. And are you a fan of Dave Grohl by any chance?
Yes, I love Dave Grohl.
I mean, let's appreciate
I know.
Yeah. He's amazing. Oh, my students make fun of me because every session I have online, I always give a quote from his book, The Storyteller, because I just think it's amazing. And he talks about what you said in such an eloquent way. You put it so eloquently. And Dave said something that grunge at the time was the answer to rock and roll. It was just, quote unquote, the cheap answer.
Yeah.
Because they didn't give a shit. They wore what they wore, like you said. And listening to your music, it becomes clearer to me now why you, as Ashani, really want to not just perform, you want to talk about why genre is important. Because genre is not just a musical term. It's more than that. So all this to say, to ask you, really, what do you define as genre? And why is it important to you, per se? Because of everything we just spoke about, really.
Genre, to me, obviously, it feels like a badge of honor when you make music that, you know, other people can recognize, and it feels like something you're together, you're with a group. But genre to me is a marketing term, and music shouldn't be made in the confines of genre. And, you know, like you said just a second ago, a lot of my influences are white bands, but a lot of them are black artists that have been radical in their approach to music, you know, and haven't thought, you know, what are my peers doing? What do I need to do in order to create music? They've just been like, how can I be free and how can I be seen? Nina Simone is one of the most amazing examples of that. She said the best time she felt, the only time she felt free, was when she was on stage and when she was playing. And one thing I really do admire about bands like Radiohead is that societally, they're given the opportunity to be free in their music creation. And as a young black artist, especially coming from London, I'm not given that right to be as free as I need to in my music to express myself in its fullest capacity. And that's what I think genre does, especially to people of colour and young Black people. They're forced or expected or stereotyped into making music that they are not seen by and that they do not enjoy because of, you know, how people expect you to be and expect you to come. So for me, genre isn't anything that I think of in my music creation process. Even my influences, I do not think about them when I'm making music. I try not to listen to music when I'm making music.
Yeah.
They are my history books. They are my study. They are my, I care about this, so I'm going to go and listen and see who changed the path of music, because in some way, that's what I'm trying to do, you know? I'm trying to just exist as myself and let people come to me and let people realise what I'm doing, you know? Enjoying it every step of the way. So to me, genre is a marketing term that shouldn't be used in creating music. So even me calling my music grunge soul was really only to give people a way to digest it, you know? When I make music, I'm not like, oh, I'm going to make a grunge soul song today. It just came out of me and I put it out and somebody told me, oh, it sounds like grunge soul. And okay. I was like, okay, it makes sense, you know? Yeah, genre has been something that has put people in boxes for decades. And even grunge, you know, it put it in a box. It made it a thing that people can have a cardboard cut out of and try to recreate, instead of delving deep into what it was, what the attitude was, why it came about, and trying to recreate that for themselves in their own world. Everybody just started making grunge, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I don't want to do in my music creation.
We're going to explore more of that, and it's a really, really insane how what you're talking about are actually filtering into my next questions, which is wonderful, because I really wanted to talk about this with you, because I felt it in a very different way. But first, I'd love us to hear some of Ashanee's music, so we're going to play a track called Favorite Thing from her beautiful EP Ash, which is out now. So do you want to very, very quickly talk about what that song means?
Yeah. Favorite Thing, I wrote with Jibby, producer, and the halfway kid Saeed as co-write. It's really just a love song about reassurance. You can be in the most loving relationship and you're with this person that you see as your whole life, but sometimes you just need to check in that they love you as much as you do, or they'd still love you if you're a worm or something. So that's what Favorite Thing's about.
Oh, I love this. I love this. Okay, folks, here is Favorite Thing by Ashanee White.
What's your favorite thing about me? Eyes are tired, my hair is messy. Am I funny? Am I lovely? What's your favorite thing about me? Make it good. So sweet. Am I funny? Am I lovely? Do you love me? Yeah. Can we lay here a while? Can we lay here a while? While we're wrapped up in each other's arms. taking your time, taking my time, taking on
That was just stunning. Oh, it's, I don't know which is my favorite track from your record, I swear. I keep listening to each one again and again, and I do feel like it's your record is so bold because it's parlaying into what you said briefly, right before we cut to listening to your music. It is you. And I know firsthand what it feels like to have to, like you said, for marketing purposes, put a genre to your music, because people are people. Like, the whole sort of fast tracking into the streaming services, TikTok, Spotify, Instagram, Facebook. Well, I don't know who really uses Facebook now. I kind of do, but it's become very, very difficult, like you said, for audiences to digest and to process what they're listening to. So in an ideal world, I think we're on the same page there, because we would probably just like to, like you said, go to a gig, listen to the music, talk to the artist, get their CD, get their tape, order it online, whatever. But it's so much more complicated than that these days, And I don't know if it's a good thing or bad thing. I just know that to make a name for yourself in this crazy, crazy, crazy industry, you have to be authentic. And I really appreciate something. Well, I appreciate everything you've been saying so far, but one thing in particular about how, as a black person growing up in London, a lot of the times it's absolutely spot on. People expect you to sing a kind of music, particular kind of music, play a particular kind of instrument. I've seen it in the Middle East, so that's something I can kind of relate to, where, or even like myself, when I moved to London and people were like, hey, how come you're composing in English? And then I had to go into the whole thing. Well, actually, my mom's kind of Canadian, and I grew up speaking English and French. And oh yeah, but why don't you sing something in Greek or Arabic? And like you said, I now you've explained it for me. I wish I had met you years ago, although you would have been too young, and I would have been said, really, you've been 5 or something. I would have said like, well, I don't feel seen by that music. Absolutely. However, going back to what moves you and what fuels your beautiful music, you do talk about Nina Simone. And I would say, when I listened, because she's one of my favorites as well for a number of reasons, when I listened to your music talking about heritage, I actually heard a lot of Tracy Chapman. And Tracy is someone who I felt seen by, because she was just this woman, picked up her guitar, played, told a story, told stories none of us never really knew how to express. Same thing with Fiona Apple, same thing with Jeff Buckley. I used to adore Jeff Buckley. Grace was one of my
He's
go-to.
amazing.
I mean, oh, what a talent. And Grace, that song for me is just, it's deliverance. So when I grew up listening, like in the 90s, to all my contemporary music, I mean, music I grew up with, but also going back to people like, I listened a lot to Nina Simone, and as a pianist, she influenced me a lot. I realized that nowadays, thanks to, actually, I'll say this on the podcast, thanks to artists like you, you're making it okay for others like myself to say, well, actually, I like this music because it's good music and because I can relate to it. Simple as that, right? Shani's like nodding, and I'm like, yes, okay. So that's basically what it is. And so I think, because you're so young and you have such a bright future ahead of you, and I know this in my heart, I think that your generation is playing a very pivotal role in redefining the stereotypes of being a singer-songwriter. Now, in my previous sessions, I've spoken to wonderful guests, female guests, about what it means to be a songwriter. My previous one, I had a great guest called Kate Smith, who is a vocal artist, but she composes music, so therefore she's a songwriter. And focusing on you, I noticed that on your live videos on YouTube, for instance, you have a way of holding your own space on stage It's almost as if, you know how in theater you have like the third wall, in music I like to think of the artist as the fourth wall. You continuously break that fourth wall between audience and artist because you are literally speaking to the audience members. I haven't been to a show of yours, but I can feel it. I can see it on
Thank
YouTube.
Thank you. It means a lot. Thank
you. It really, oh, you're very welcome. Because for me, the minute I saw you perform, again, folks, online, it became very apparent to me. And so I think that because people can resonate with that, you've been given a lot of leeway, rightly deserved, to actually use your voice as a person who will influence other female musicians. So we're going to talk about that very, very quickly. And this is what I mentioned to you briefly before we had a sound check. During our sound check, you've co-created a beautiful fund called...
Kicking Down the Door.
Kicking Down the Door. Good. Because it starts, so Kicking Down the Door, can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I know it's an association with Women in Jazz Media. I'd love you to just talk about it and the work.
Yeah. Women in Jazz Media is such an amazing platform. It's given me a lot of support as a young artist. You know, I wasn't really releasing music before I started started working with Women in Jazz Media. It kind of came about at the same time, and Fiona gave me a lot of, Fiona Ross, who founded Women in Jazz Media, gave me a lot of leeway just to decide what I wanted to do. She helped me write my first music journalism article. She got that published. She helped me start a podcast. She was like, what do you want to do? Let's do it. And when I started creating music and being an artist, she has been my, like, one of my biggest cheerleaders. And when I came, we kind of came and she was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I would love to start a fund. And I would love to, I know how hard, I'm sure you do too, how hard it is to get funding in the music industry as an independent artist. And I aim to stay as independent as I can for as long as I can. And I want to help inspire other artists to do that too. So the fund was there just to give a little bit of money to some Black female alternative music creators who are making groundbreaking music. It doesn't matter about genre. I just think it needs to be groundbreaking and brave, because a lot of people struggle to make brave music now because of the amount of pressure we have on the industry and on TikTok and all of these things. There's so many more things going around our head nowadays and as there were in the 90s, you know. It was easier to exist as yourself back then, because you didn't have social media or anything to compare yourself to.
I agree.
So I wanted to be able to help other artists to find their authentic self and find their thing that really gets them going and that they want to study for nights on nights on nights and they want to work on. That's Kicking Down the Door. It's about really kicking down the door into a space where others can create their own space, not into a space that's mine, because my space is my space, my look is my look, my who I am is literally who I am, but it's kicking down the door into a space where we can exist as ourselves, which is really important to me.
That's really beautiful. We're going to talk about that a little more in just a moment. So just to go back to what you said about the Kicking Down the Door Fund, I know that you have a beautiful showcase you're putting on on the, correct me if I'm wrong, Shani, on the 15th of November at Toulouse-Lautrec, correct?
That sounds about right.
Okay. Well, I'll leave you with her details at the end of this podcast so you can check out. So you've put on a freaking showcase, woman. That's just amazing. And I wish I was in London then to go and attend. For, as you said, Black identifying, if I can say, musicians who make alternative music. And it does feel like this conversation has been very, very much rooted in asserting oneself as in terms of locale, in terms of identity, in terms of musicianship. Which is why the next song I'm going to play, because I do want folks to listen to three of your tracks, is going to be the beautifully titled Meant to Be. And actually, very, very quickly, because I just wrote an article for the Ezra Collective.
Oh, I love them.
They're
They're amazing.
amazing. I
Amazing
know.
boys.
Oh, amazing boys. And the twins, James and oh God, I forgot his name now. So embarrassing. James and Mark. They were at Guildhall with me in a program. And I just, you know, when you
Amazing.
just walk into a room and you know that, yeah, these people mean business. They remind me a lot of your uncanny ability to just say, I'm here about the music. So their third record is called Where I'm Meant to Be. So we're gonna play your beautiful track called Meant to Be from your EP, Ash. This is it.
I couldn't imagine writing a sad song about you. I wouldn't be able to wipe the smile off my face, to find the words to say I hate you, and I never wanna see you again. 'Cause the truth is that I love you, and I don't care how they see me loving you. So let me be frank. I wanna thank you for letting me be me. Honestly, we were meant to be. House on a phone, in a big enough garden for a studio on the lawn. I never asked for anything more, but if I did, you grab your coat and off you go. So let me be frank. I wanna thank you for letting me be me. Honestly, we won it. Honestly, we won it. Honestly, we honestly, we wanted to be.
That was meant to be. Beautiful, 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 beautiful. I keep hearing so many of your influences in your music, and I know that's a good thing. For the simple reason that I think music is a shared space, whereas our identities are individual. So when you spoke about the showcase, and you said that, you know, your space is your space, but you're creating a space for everyone to fit in, that does make sense. That does make sense to me. And I know what you mean about holding on strong to your individual, you know, presence in the scene, because let's face it, we do have to mark ourselves in this crazy industry. So I hear you. And I think that because you're branching out and you're allowing for people like yourself to come and play the music that they want to play. And like in another thing I'm thinking of, when you mentioned the 90s, how it was easier for women to do that, it actually was. Funnily enough, I feel like we've gone backwards in time, historically speaking. We really have. I mean, if right, it sucks, really. It really does. I can't think of a more eloquent way to put it. If you had, you know, we had people like Tracy Chapman, Inja Erie, we had people like Lauryn Hill, who might have, you know, set the mark really for alternative music. And I'm thinking of, you know, high profile artists like Erykah Badu when she branched out into rock. And I remember that set she played with, I'm sure you've seen it, with My Morning Jacket. And she did that totally grunge, badass version of Tyrone. And I thought, But this is all about music. See, it's the way we talk about it, like you said beautifully, Ashani, that matters. And I'm so happy that you're saying, no, I want you to look at what I do. I want you to listen to what I do. And I want you to listen to the music and then think of everything else.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's what I got. And you're being very clear and eloquent about it. So I'm glad I got that vibe, because I do feel that representation for every single artist that's been sidelined, wrongfully so, is just, it's got to stop. I don't know how. I'm not here to offer solutions, but I do know that we're making headway thanks to young artists like yourself. And so, very, very quickly, because I cannot believe we have like 6 minutes left. This has felt like a 5 minute conversation. It's so fun. I really want to ask you about, what are your future plans, in the sense of, do you want to work with other artists and really take your music out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, I am a songwriter. So yes. I think my role in songwriting works quite differently to how it normally works in songwriting. And I've learned this from my friend Saeed, the halfway kid who helped me write some songs. My job as a songwriter in a room is to help the artist exist as themselves, not to come into a room and write songs for other people, write songs with other people, making sure that they're using the words that really do explain how they feel, how they want to speak to their audience, and just bring and make music conversational again, especially in the art, like, you know, in R&B and in things like that, and in pop and in these genres where they think that they don't have space for meaningful lyrics. There are space for meaningful lyrics. We can put them in there and still, you know, get the buzzword on TikTok at the time. And I think that's my role as a songwriter in a room, is just to, again, show people that existing as yourself is okay, and help them do that rather than being forced to fit into anything that they've been told by A&R, has been told by labels. We're the artist. How do you portray yourself as an artist? So, you know, I see my music career is as a sustainable one. I want to be doing this for the rest of my life. That's my plan. And I'm only like 3 years in, so I don't know what the future is going to hold, but I hope it's an exciting one, full of connection and singing and writing and putting out bold music, which is what I plan to do.
I'm so sure, and it's already happening for you. I wonder if you were given, just someone told you, hey Ashani, by the way folks, very, very quickly, I have to put this in the podcast, she's gonna laugh now. So Ashain in Arabic, I told Ashani this because I, you know, I asked her, like the hundreds of others before me, what does your name mean? It actually means rebirth in Arabic, just so you know. So that is so, you can totally say that at a gig and it'd be like, ooh.
Well, yeah. Well, I might just keep this. It's so true to me, with my mum just being like, she looks like an Ashani, we'll go with that. And people have asked me, this is the first time I'm hearing this, people have asked me so many times, what does your name mean? I'm like, I don't know, hon. Like, I think my mum just liked the sound of it. So that's who I am. But I love my name. I really do love my name. I hold my name very high. It's a funny thing. I didn't want to be an artist earlier on in my kind of singing career. I wanted to be a session vocalist, and when I decided to be an artist, it was a no-brainer that I would call myself my name. You know, a lot of artists have to find different names, or they want to because they want to come from a different part of themselves. I knew that my artist name is going to be Ashani White, and even when we were naming this project Ash, I was kind of umming and ahhing, what do we call it? Do we call it something? It has to be something profound. And my producer and partner, he was like to me, call it Ash.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, duh. Like, it's Ash. That's exactly what it is. It's me. It's nothing else.
It's you. It's
totally
you.
So, yeah.
I love it. Yeah. And your name, as I said, in Arabic means rebirth, you know, born from the ashes. We could go on and on with all the, you know, metaphors and everything. Yeah. It's just, I love how that works. And very, very quickly, because this is not about me, this podcast, this is totally focused on you. But my last name is, my artist name is my own name too. Mm-hmm. And Eid in Arabic means the festival. So yeah, there you go. So
yeah, you can always, amazing.
Like, parlay that into the marketing thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah, there we go.
I cannot believe this has gone by so quickly. Honestly, this has
Yeah.
been so
I
enriching.
would love
And
to keep talking if you have time. I have time if
I
you want
have
to keep
time. I definitely have time. Folks, this is off the record, but I am going to continue to talk to Ashani because she's just
talking.
brilliant. I do want to end with one little thing before we go off and talk away from this podcast. It has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. You are such a beacon of light, and I really, really believe in the next generation showcasing the way for future songwriters because you kept saying how you're a singer, but I do feel, which you're an incredible singer, obviously, but I do feel that you're here to stay and grow as a songwriter. So, very quickly, name me two artists that you would love to work with as a songwriter.
Tom York, 100% Tom York. That would be incredible, and I would really love to do a session with Johnny Greenwood as well. So maybe we can like, maybe is that two or is that cheating?
No, you can say one more. You can say as many as you want. We have a minute.
Who else? And Leanne Lahavas. I would love to write a song with Leanne
Yes.
Lahavas.
Oh, I'm sure she would too. I'm so sure she would too. Well,
Yeah, I'm manifesting
you are, and
it.
I sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, I hope it happens for you. When I'm in London, we will definitely get together and play some music. Absolutely. It has been an absolute pleasure. This has been Ashani Wright. Beautiful, beautiful artist of her own accord, speaking to yours truly, Lara Edie, for the Women in Jazz Media podcast, The Notes Between. We're going to end on a note, pun intended, with a beautiful lock and key from her album, Ash. Thanks so much, Ashani.
Thank you. Bye.
Beside me, you can get some sleep, and I won't tell no one a thing. Let her with me on the lock. And if you need to get there slowly, I've nowhere to be, and I won't tell no one a thing. Let her with me on the lock.
Yeah.